Right. So I'm calling this talk Talking About Politics as a Buddhist. So partway through writing up these notes, I was like, well, what do we mean by politics? It's something that can be kind of hard to define, but I found a very broad, broad definition that I think is good. Politics is the set of activities that are associated with making decisions in groups or other forms of power relations among individuals, such as distribution of resources or status. So I was kind of thinking of this as like what we should do, right? What we should do as a local community or a city or a county or a country or the planet, right? What should we as a group do? So I figured I would start off by reviewing some of the very rich Buddhist teachings on right speech. And then with that as a context, we can start talking about, oh, so how do we have conversations about politics? And also, I realized partway through that, like, it doesn't really matter if you tend to actually talk about politics with either people who agree with you or people who disagree with you. Like, we're all having like a conversation about politics in our head, even if we don't bother to say it, right? Even if we're like, you know, I don't like having those conversations, chances are inside we're still kind of nursing this narrative. So the Buddha on Right Speech, this is from Tukunda the Silversmith, Pali Canon Sutta. And how is one made pure in four ways by verbal action? There is the case where a certain person, abandoning false speech, abstains from false speech. He doesn't consciously tell a lie for his own sake, for the sake of another, or for the sake of any reward. He speaks the truth, holds to the truth, is firm, reliable, no deceiver of the world. So that's the one. Abandoning divisive speech, he abstains from divisive speech. What he has heard here, he does not tell there to break those people apart from these people. Thus reconciling those who have broken apart or cementing those who are united, he loves concord, delights in concord, enjoys concord, and speaks things that create concord. Abandoning abusive speech, she abstains from abusive speech. She speaks words that are soothing to the ear, that are affectionate, that go to the heart, that are polite, appealing, and pleasing to people at large. And then the fourth, abandoning idle chatter. She abstains from idle chatter. She speaks in season, speaks what is factual, what is in accordance with the goal, that is the Dhamma and the Vinaya. She speaks words worth treasuring, seasonable, reasonable, circumscribed, connected with the goal of liberation. This is how one is made pure in four ways by verbal action. So we had some some rich Buddhist teachings that set a very high bar for our speech. So many of you are familiar with this one, where the Buddha says there are three factors you should consider before speaking. Is it beneficial? Or first of all, is it true and or factual, beneficial, and then endearing or agreeable to others? So if it's untrue, unbeneficial, and unendearing, keep it zipped. Untrue, unbeneficial, but endearing, don't say it. True, but not beneficial or endearing, don't say it. True and endearing, but not beneficial, don't say it. If it's true, beneficial, and endearing, of course, but you still consider the proper time for saying it. And you might need to say something that is true and beneficial, but is not endearing, is hard to hear, in which case you consider carefully when to say it. Then, of course, we have our precepts on speech. Do not speak dishonestly, communicate truthfully. Do not dwell on past mistakes, create wisdom from ignorance. And do not praise self or blame others, maintain modesty, extol virtue. And then one of my favorites is Dogen from the Shishobo, the four ways bodhisattvas embrace living beings. And those four ways are free giving, kind speech, beneficial action, and identity action, or kind of sharing the same aim or being in the same boat with living beings. So kind speech, he says, means that when you see sentient beings, you arouse the heart of compassion and offer words of loving care. It is contrary to cruel or violent speech. In the secular world, there is the custom of asking after someone's health. In the Buddha way, there is the phrase, please treasure yourself, and the respectful address to seniors, may I ask how you are? It is kind speech to speak to sentient beings as you would to a baby. Praise those with a virtue, pity those without it. If kind speech is offered, little by little, kind speech expands. Thus, even kind speech that is not ordinarily known or seen comes into being. Be willing to practice it for this entire present life. Do not give up world after world, life after life. Kind speech is the basis for reconciling rulers and subduing enemies. Those who hear kind speech from you have a delighted expression and a joyful mind. Those who hear of your kind speech will be deeply touched. They will always remember it. Know that kind speech arises from kind heart, and kind heart from the seed of compassionate heart. Ponder the fact that kind speech is not just praising the merit of others, it has the power to turn the destiny of the nation. This is a lot of guidance around speech. At the very least, it makes it clear our speech matters. I mean, right speech is one aspect of the Eightfold Path. 3 out of 10 of our grave precepts have to do with speech. And it's not just about its effect on others, but that certainly counts, but also the effect of on our own mind, our own habits. But now, when we're talking about politics in terms of what we should do as a society, as a group, as a country, how do we be responsible citizens? How do we be engaged bodhisattvas? It would be very easy to take all of these strictures on speech and just, well, it might not be easy not to say anything at all, but at least, you know, we could be trying not to say anything at all, right? We could just, you know, something came out, but for the most part, we'll just like, if I'm going to keep these rules, I just won't engage. But that's a cop-out, right? Now we have the bodhisattva vow, and we need to be responsible. At what time is it time to speak up about injustice, environmental destruction, the erosion of democracy, the rise of fascism? Usually when the, you know, things like fascism has arisen in the past, there's all kinds of people who are like, you know, didn't speak up. So if you like to talk about politics and feel that you do so in a way that's consistent with your aspirations and vows, I think that's great. But I'm imagining that many folks here today are like me. I mean, I don't have too many conversations about, I used to. I just kind of, yeah, I don't know. Because a lot of times, whether these conversations are with people who mostly agree with us or people who disagree, they tend to be unsatisfying, agitating, depressing. And oftentimes afterwards, you know, even if I feel like, you know, I agreed with somebody or whatever, we talked about some important things, a lot of times afterwards, there's kind of like a bad taste in my mouth. Like I realized some of my speech was divisive or judgmental, self-aggrandizing. So my recommendation is to keep the Buddhist teachings on speech in mind, or to study them, to absorb them, to contemplate them. But in the moment, it's very unlikely that we're going to be able or willing to go through, you know, that whole checklist before we say anything. I mean, it's a conversation, right? People say stuff, and then if you're constantly saying, is it true? Is it beneficial? Is it, you know, like you're just not going to say anything at all. So my suggestion is simply to ask yourself, why am I speaking at any given moment? And this unfolds into many other questions, of course. What am I getting out of this conversation or engagement or expressing myself? What do I hope to get out of it? What do I hope to achieve? Am I achieving it? So I always forget to pull up my brainstorm sheets. But let's see. Okay. Now I will share screen, assuming that I've been empowered to do so. Yes. All right. Expand my view of the Zoom folks, but I can't see everybody. So if you end up wanting to like contribute something, be sure to like hit the raise hand feature at the bottom of your Zoom screen, and that will mean like you pop to the front of the pack. Oh dear. It's very hard to. All right. Reasons that we talk or think about politics. This is not looking at all how I would like it to look. This is why it would be good to get this all set up beforehand. Okay. Anybody want to begin throwing out some ideas?
Oh, Domio.
Yeah.
Would sharing facts about our local conditions regarding climate change or I was thinking specifically about our electrical grid and in terms of climate change with perhaps increased days of heat or that kind of pressure. To me, that's in a way political because it concerns climate change.
Yeah, and it bears on what we should do as a society. And so I'm just going to write down sharing facts, because it could be about anything, reasons that we might be talking. Jessica.
So one reason I realize I often talk about climate change or politics is to relieve my own anxiety by discussing with others.
And there's many forms that could take for you, like, what about the conversation helps relieve the anxiety?
So there's this pent up angst about various things going on, and saying it out loud and sharing it with another person just helps release some of that. Rather than just holding it all, because sometimes I have difficulty releasing it.
Olivia.
I guess so. A lot of times I talk about politics because I feel like I lack the power to influence policy on a higher level. And so I guess the purpose would be to influence the policy that actually impacts my life. Like for me, it would be, for example, immigration policies and how that impacts our lives and our family.
So when you are, like, where would you be having these conversations, in a sense that you think the conversation itself will impact the policy?
Yes, it will influence others to change their vote eventually and change policy.
Cedar.
I was thinking about politics in terms of beliefs as well, and just expanding perspectives as recent.
So she was saying expanding perspectives. So would that be you're carrying on the talking about this with someone, with people, in order to learn more?
Both sides.
Learn and, okay, so the sharing, there's the sharing facts and info, and also learning. Yoli.
So I talk about politics because I feel helpless to do anything about it. And by talking and sharing, I feel empowered.
Why do you think that is, seeing as, I mean?
So, but you should ask, because I have started on Facebook posting stuff, not like in an offensive way. When I come across something that I feel people need to know about, like, I just don't think people are as informed about some of the things that are going on. And so I have, like, who was it that was saying that they have a lot of angst? And I don't know how to do my part in that. And so I think that by at least posting stuff that is not abrasive and not confrontative, just educational, I feel like I can maybe be heard by at least one or two people.
Betty.
I think that I don't talk about politics a lot because it's a great source of anxiety to do so. But I think sometimes when I talk to like-minded people, I'm kind of looking for justification and support for my own beliefs.
Leah.
Reacting just to somebody else, just reacting defensively.
For myself, I noticed a weird kind of, I mean, I don't do this so much anymore once I saw it, right? Because I've this kind of increased mindfulness about what we are actually doing as we are engaging in a conversation. I recognized how, like, it could even be a minor thing. And like, not even really a big deal. But, you know, my mom would say something about, I don't know, like, corporations are doing this, blah, blah, blah. And, like, if I thought it was wrong, I had to say, you know, I couldn't, any view that I thought was erroneous or incomplete, I was compelled to, like, counter it. As if, like, I don't know, like my mom not understanding exactly perfectly was going to bring about the downfall of our, you know, nation or something like that. It's just kind of, I don't know. It was almost like, you know, kind of tying back to that sense of, like, my sense of things. So if you say the opposite or you say something that's different, like, I have to argue with that to maintain my own sense of what is true. So I'll just kind of add kind of compulsive need to state my own view. Of course, I'm not thinking of it as my view. I'm thinking of it as the way things are. John.
I'm going to throw out in-group signaling.
And I would kind of, I mean, that's kind of the same thing, I think, as kind of othering, right? Because, like, here's our group, and we're not that. We're not those people.
David had a comment in the chat, speak against injustices.
Let's see, and then we'll go dirt and then cloud. So was it cedar?
I was just going to add the being out of the mom thing, but I find that's the thing to me about tiny, that I'm like, okay, that's a seed for later to maybe interject, but not right now.
Okay, so so cedar was saying you might, rather than interject right away, just save it up. That seems like good practice. Let's see, speak into justices, and then let's see, Denny, and then Dan.
Well, I have to say that I don't really like talking about politics anymore. If I'm with a group of friends and I know it's going to be constructive, then I welcome it. But I frequently, or I used to, and to some degree I still do, run into people whose source of facts is completely different from the facts that I get. And those in the past, when I've tried to make corrections or get that point across, it's just so incredibly frustrating and very, very sad. So I just am very selective and picky and careful about when I talk about politics.
Thank you. Dan.
It's kind of similar to the in-group signaling. It's, people often talk about politics to sort of assess other people to figure out if they're allies or
can those in the cloud hear Hear that?
No.
Okay. Do you want to come up to the
hot seat?
So I find that people often talk about politics as a way of assessing other people to figure out if they are allies or if they're enemies. And in the best way, this could be seen as a way to build community with people who share values, but I've also seen it split people apart, and then in a group setting to turn a group into a group that just thinks one way. And then people who don't think that way are they're out there in the wilderness.
And I have to say, I was going to get to it at the end, but I think that we do this as a sangha. We may not be the worst group in the world about it, but we do assume, I mean, most of us, I shouldn't assume who's out there, right? Maybe you don't do this and you think differently, but for the most part, what I feel and what I hear, we assume everybody here is very liberal. Everybody here is a Democrat. Everybody here hates Trump. Everybody here yeah. wants to drive an electric car. Everybody here, you know, just like me, has a little thing up in your window. Water is life. Love is love. There are no humans are illegal, right? Like we could put that down as our, like, this is our motto, which part of me is kind of like, well, of course that's our motto. Like, well, naturally, like, that's what's right. But yeah, then we're going to be exploring a little more. Like, even if that's what we in our heart of hearts think, is that actually the most skillful way to operate? You know, if there was someone in our sangha or multiple, but me, and it's, we don't even have to say if there was, right? If we start arguing politics amongst ourselves, we get any past the signaling details, we're going to get to points where we disagree, right? Should you fly at all? No, I don't think you should fly. Like, you know, so we could get into it if we started to go down that road. And what would be the point? Would we change anyone's mind?
No, if somebody exclude people.
Yes, we could. So if somebody, let's say somebody comes to the sangha and they believe in the opposite of water is life and no humans are illegal, and okay, they, and yet honestly, when you think about the other side of that spectrum, that's not how they phrase things. They don't say the environment sucks and, you know, sometimes love isn't love, and they have other values that prioritize. But imagine that somebody does come to the sangha who you would really, really disagree with in very fundamental ways. Like, I think most of us in our heart of, like, secretly in our heart of hearts, are going to be like, well, they don't feel welcome. Do we really want them? You know, which is like, what kind of Buddhist value is that? And contrary, if you were to go, say, to a Christian sangha and, or sangha, congregation, whatever, Christian group, and like, and for some reason you really wanted to take part, but they disagreed in many ways, like, I think you would be touched if they actually treated you in a Christ-like way, right? Even if you disagreed, like, if they walked their talk in terms of their practice, that might actually soften you in many more ways than, like, them coming after you in the hall to try to change your politics. Erica's been...
Oh no, I was just gonna say I don't think we can say that everybody feels that way in the sangha. And I mean,
yeah.
I just would hate to make anybody feel uncomfortable, but, you know, as you said, if you don't feel exactly this way, then maybe this isn't the place for you. Right. You know, I think it's a lot more important to just say, you know, this is my view, this is yours, but we don't have to.
I mean, it's tricky though, because like, all right, I can think of like, well, I definitely want to make space in our Sangha for people who might feel differently about being vegetarian and flying.
Sure.
But then I get to a point where kind of like, am I ready to make space in the Sangha for somebody who thinks that gay people are going to hell?
Right.
I mean, it gets a little more uncomfortable then, right? And it's difficult. It makes our brain hurt, right? It's cognitive dissonance. It requires a maturity of mind and practice, an ability to see things in other than black and white. When we often point to the other side, we accuse them of that, right? So how, I mean, it makes it tricky, just like all of the precepts, right? There's no just like, well, if you're going to be a good Buddhist, this is how you act. This is what you say. These are the decisions you make. These are the things you buy. This is the work job you have, right? It's not like that. It gives you the spirit of it. And then you get to, so how would we, if we tolerated more political diversity, if you will, within our Sangha, how would we speak truly? How would we call something out if somebody said something racist, right? That's what we're being asked to do. If somebody says something racist, to say, you know, but, you know, it'd be more difficult to do that in a way that was consistent with our Buddhist values than to just, you know, cut somebody off at the knees, which is just going to make them angry and spiteful and resentful, and they'll leave and they'll hate the other side even more.
So, does everybody here aware of Project 2025? So Project 2025 is a very conservative manifesto for how they want to insert white nationalistic views into our government. And so they're pushing, that's part of the reason they're pushing Trump. So the president of the Heritage Foundation, who the people that wrote this, they call it manifesto, was being interviewed by somebody on MSNBC, and I was prepared to hate this guy, you know, and he stands for everything that I don't. But I liked him. Like, he was engaged. He was not defensive. He truly believed in what he was doing. And that really showed in the way that he spoke in such a non-confrontational, he listened to other people and he acknowledged what people were saying, but he's saying, this is how I feel. This is how we feel about this. And so, you know, I think there is a place to care about people who think differently from us, because after seeing him, I'd say I could be his friend. He and I would not agree on these things, but I like him enough but he has convictions. And I think in some ways that's almost, I felt more respect for him because he truly believed in what they were doing. And so I hate to say that, and I wanted to hate him, but I just couldn't.
Alyssa, one more comment from Dennis, and then I'm going to move on. Yes.
Yeah, I was just going to say that there's really two reasons to talk politics. One is to try and understand the other person's point of view and maybe change your mind. And the other reason is to make them understand your point of view and change their mind.
You might say that's the constructive reasons to have conversations. I thought of
constructive reasons.
Exactly. I mean, that's what, if we are being mindful about why we are talking about things, then I think we need to be honest, right? So here's some of the ones that I came up with. Assigning, and remember, this is also like what's going on in your head when you are trying to explain or make sense of political thing. And I'll just go ahead and stop share here. and I see your hand, Alice, I'll get you in a minute. Assigning blame. Maybe this is about fixing the problem, like if what's causing it, we can search it out. But that's not usually what it's about, right? It's usually just to feel better that we're not to blame. Those people are to blame. Making sense of things, hoping to make the world seem like a place of order, and so we can predict and understand. So that kind of relieving a sense of anxiety about the way things are. Trying to convince others because the fact of the difference of their opinion feels uncomfortable or threatening. Venting. The Buddha said idle chatter is no good. And I'm kind of like, that's a very like kind of masculine, hardcore kind of attitude, right? Sometimes we just have to talk, right? Sometimes it's just like, but can we be mindful as we're doing it, right? Like, I just needed to get together with this good friend so that we can like bitch about like, world going to hell in a handbasket. Okay, we did our thing. Building up our sense of self, seeking reinforcement for our own views, wanting to feel right or morally superior, compulsion to assert our view when we hear an alternative one, vilifying others. If we feel disempowered, the least thing that we can do is try to hurt the other side or the other person, even though they don't hear it. And then of course the constructive things, right? Learning from others, actively seeking solutions together, seeking to understand those we disagree with, respectfully standing up for what we see to be right. So before I get into, can we maintain mindfulness while speaking, Alice?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
I just thought I should bring up that I don't like talking about politics, and I don't like people talking to me about politics because there's a lot of assumptions made about who I am and what I believe in. And I think that it's important not to pigeonhole people into certain boxes. Like, just because you're conservative doesn't mean that you love guns or you want gays to all die or whatever. It's a very pigeonhole-y kind of like box you put people into. And I think all of us have different beliefs on some scale on different things. So just naming that someone is a liberal or a Democrat, it kind of pigeonholes them into like this, oh, so you must believe A, B, C, D, E. When really it's not true. So, I'd rather talk about certain talking points, like, oh, what do you think about, being fiscally conservative? And that's a little bit more of a pinpoint nuanced topic than like really attacking someone. Oh, I found out you're conservative and you happen to like own 30 guns, don't you? That may not be true.
Yeah, and I think it'd be really fascinating to be a fly on the wall, like an in-group, like anti-liberal conservative discussion, and just to hear like how we get pigeonholed, right? I'm even making an assumption we, right? But like if you, the people who like me who put the like water is life sign in my window, because I don't even think we even have any clue about what the assumptions, the pigeonholes we get put in, which probably are kind of true sometimes.
We're socialists.
All right. So in terms of mindfulness while speaking, so we, in our precepts, we have the three pure precepts, right? So there's cease from harmful action, do only good, do good for others. So this really describes beautifully the progression of behavior change. So whenever there's something that we want to change or be more mindful about, Like the first thing is just to kind of stop, to stop the patterns that we've gotten into. And we may not know what else to do, right? So maybe momentarily, if you are somebody who gets into vehement political discussions, or even just in your own head, if you're, you know, constantly hashing over like, well, who's to blame and why is this and why is the world this way, to just trying to let that go. But then we don't stop there, right? It's not just like, don't think about it. So then what is good? You know, what is beneficial? And then, you know, really engaging again, doing what is good for others. So here was, there's a little list of things. So when we are speaking, paying attention to the body, our physical attitude, are we getting kind of like, I think when we get into arguments and stuff, we can get kind of like tensed up, like we're ready to fight. Is there a sense of agitation, energy? I know that there can be a sense, it depends on your style of speaking, but there can be a way that just like somebody's still talking and you're just like, you know, the next thing is just ready to pop out of your mouth. Noticing that, just noticing like, I'm finding it difficult to listen. I want to just, you know, state my position over and over. Our voice, the volume of our voice. Are we speaking quickly? Are we leaving any space between what somebody else says and what we say? The content, are we repeating ourselves? If somebody with us is agreeing, are we just kind of like piling on and building each other's sense of like, yeah, right, yeah, yeah. Pontificating at length, or if it's with somebody you disagree with about even a minor thing, right? Is it just back and forth? And they state their thing, and you state your thing, and I state their thing, and you state their thing. And, you know, somebody listening is just going like, you know, because no headway is being made whatsoever. People aren't actually listening to each other, and it's ridiculous. Here's an interesting one, which I've found myself doing, and it's tricky. I can't say that I've worked so much on the skillfulness. Overstating the case. And I think this is a form of dishonesty or breaking the not speaking truthfully. So here's an example, just an example of, let's say, there's a big homeless problem in Portland because the city is so mismanaged. And then you could have a nice conversation about confirming this idea. And you know what else the city did wrong? And the city did wrong this. And the city is poorly managed, dysfunctional, right? Okay. Now, here's what's more honest. I have read that Portland's system of city government, with at-large council members heading separate departments, may have seriously limited the city's ability to respond effectively to homelessness. Now we can have a conversation about like, where did you read that? And is that a reliable sort, a good newspaper or whatever? What have they tried to do where effectiveness has been limited? You know, how much do you know about the city government structure? Like, you know, so it's that more nuanced thing. But I notice when I'm feeling, you know, disempowered or want to feel that kind of affirmation for my point of view or something, I'm just more likely to just, you know, state it in terms that I've glossed over. Conclusions, a sense of satisfaction about having solved the problem, when usually it's all just theoretical, not applied, right? Like all of us can be the armchair politicians, like, oh, if we just did this, if we just did that, if we just decreased taxes, then all would be well, right? And then, and if any of us actually got into politics and had to do this, we would realize, like, it's not that simple. And then, of course, the other side is fundamentally different, morally bankrupt, consciously greedy or self-interested, ignorant, victim of greater forces trying to manipulate them. That is what both sides lob at each other. Mean-spirited, dangerous. So the more mindfulness we can bring, the more choices that we have. It's like the process of shining the light of awareness on what we're doing. Gradually over time, to me, it feels like time kind of slows down. The unfolding of things tends to slow down a little bit. Notice when I first started practicing was just like, you know, you say something, bam, like I'm going to respond. And then even, you know, it might be a day later that I go, oh, I did that thing again, right? And then maybe a few hours later, you recognize you did it again. Then maybe immediately afterwards, you recognize you did it again. Then there's the frustrating point where you recognize it as you're doing it, but you can't stop it. Then there's the point where you kind of recognize it. Oh, this is one of those situations again, and I can feel this desire to arise, but then we kind of still do it anyway. And then there's that, you know, that magical moment where like we actually caught it early enough that we were able to say, okay, in this example, right? Like, okay, instead of just, you know, following up with that person's statement with like my own opinion, maybe I asked them a question to better understand what it was they were saying, you know. But I do think as politics heats up over the next few months, the very most important aspect of all of this is the not othering the other side. When we are together, be careful with our political speech. Let us not assume everyone around us thinks like us. Let's not assume we're all liberals or Democrats. In any given situation, imagine the other is standing within earshot. No matter who or what, imagine they're right there, right? Like, I may think like there's some terrible corrupt executive from Exxon who knew climate change was happening anyway, but then like sold, you know, like just terrible and greedy and whatever. But how I'm going to vent to somebody is like, if that person's standing right there, how would I say it? I would know. I mean, this is the good thing about actually being face to face with people, right? Is we do have a sense of empathy. We do recognize that we're going to be causing anger or conflict, or that we're, you know, making somebody feel alienated or uncomfortable or something like that. So we respond more skillfully, even if it's important that we state something clearly. So with the thought of, you said, oh yes, go ahead, Ruthann.
Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers said, look to the leaders, and I think of Joanna Macy, looking for common ground, you know, throwing off the names some people would call her like wacko or communist. And so just knowing that there is that strategy, the don't know mind, where we can sit with the turmoil, maybe the sadness. And I think if we look for the common ground and find it in our conversations, in our sitting with others that have a different viewpoint.
Thank you. And I think that's a good way to put it, that I think coming up, there are a lot of things we are going to need to speak up for. You know, the compassionate treatment of immigrants, racial justice, you know, living in a change, making changes that mean that human beings can survive on this planet. But speaking up for those things, kind of like Alice was saying, like, you know, like, we'll speak up for that thing, right? Rather than like, well, we all have the same opinion about that, and those people over there have that, have the wrong opinion about that. I mean, why even go there, right? It's, that's just an extra thing that makes us feel, that builds up our sense of self, and I don't know, it's not fruitful, right? This is why the Buddha, I didn't even mention this one, but in the Dhammapada, hatred ends through non-hatred alone. Sometimes people say love, but you know, it's basically like it has to stop somewhere. So as long as there is that sense of hatred and conflict, that's just gonna keep going. Well, I'm at 12:15, so I'm sure we could have a very long, fruitful discussion on this, but maybe you can all do that later. Abiding in this ephemeral world like a lotus in muddy water. The mind is pure and goes beyond. Thus we bow to Buddha. All Buddhas throughout space and time. All honored ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas. Wisdom beyond wisdom. Maha Prajna Paramita. Thank you, everyone. Bye.